This is The Radical Therapist, a space where we explore the intersections of collaborative therapy, philosophy, art, and science and technology in a post-Freud, post-psychology world.
Welcome to The Radical Therapist. We are at episode number 42. This is your host, Chris Hoff, and I'm excited about, as always, about today's episode. We're going to be meeting with narrative psychologist Jonathan Adler, and I first got exposed to Dr. Adler's work from an article in The Atlantic. If you have not read it, you should. It's called Life's Stories: How to Arrange the Plot Points of Your Life into a Narrative, or How You Arrange the Plot Points of Your Life into a Narrative Can Shape Who You Are and Is a Fundamental Part of Being Human. A great article called Life Stories from The Atlantic. That's where I got introduced to his work and reached out to him, and he so generously agreed to meet with me, and I think you're going to get a lot out of this conversation. We cover lots of ground, and one of the grounds that we cover is this sense of something I've been through a couple of times. I think I'm going through right now that I'm going to take a minute to share about. And this is this idea of kind of narrative incoherence, or how when narrative identity goes through change. I think a recent experience where I went through this period where Dr. Adler talks about this change that happens, and when we're kind of in this place in between change, the betwixt in between, the liminal space, where we haven't really moved from one sense of self to this other sense of self, and how that can create some destabilization, or what he would say, meaningless or incoherence. How that can be a bit difficult time. And I remember, I'm just going to share these stories. I remember, because I think it's important. Before I became a therapist, for those of you that don't know, I come from, I started in the corporate world, and then I started a company, this technology staffing company that became quite successful, actually. When I left to go to graduate school, we were at 200 employees. We were doing eight figures in sales, and we were doing really well. It was a successful run. As an entrepreneur, I had two business partners, but I had this experience. I went through some changes I won't go into too much detail, but I decided, I knew that I was a psych undergrad. I knew I eventually wanted to do counseling, therapy, what have you. But I finally hit the point in 2009, I think is when I went to my business partners and I said, I can't do this anymore. I need to go do this thing. I need to go become a counselor. And I didn't know what that was going to be like. But so we worked that all out, and I exited the company and I went into grad school and quickly found myself in this kind of weird kind of in-between place where I had this identity for, I think, 16 years. I was in my company, 16 years of like successful entrepreneur guy. And it was a narrative that, served me. And I didn't know how strong it was actually until I stepped out of it. And when I was going through grad school, and I hadn't actually started, I wasn't a licensed therapist yet. I wasn't kind of fully into that career or what have you. And I was really struck with how, it was a difficult place for me trying to find out who I was again, how I would story myself. I still don't do that really well. But it was really kind of destabilizing, and sometimes still is. And I think I'm going through that kind of now with, coming up on 2 years ago now, I got a PhD, and, there's some expectations maybe, or at least I think there are about, well, I should do academia, or I should be writing this, or I should be doing these. And I think most days I just want to do YouTube channels and podcasts and maybe write a book or something like that. And so I'm kind of in this kind of in between place again, like not sure. Not experiencing narrative identity coherence. Let's just put it that way. So, So there's my quick pitch for you. And I'm sure I am not the only one. We all have our experiences. I know some of you probably now are experiencing some narrative identity incoherence, we'll call it. But so if you are, this conversation you might find really helpful. So, but before we get to our guests, just some quick announcements. The Radical Therapist, or those of you who have been listening for a while, the Radical Roundtable, we are going to be doing a live, at least that's the plan right now, a live podcast at the AFTA conference, the American Family Therapy Academy conference in Austin, Texas, June 21st through 24th. I don't know the exact day that we'll be doing that, but we will be doing that. And once I get more information, I will let you know. So if you're going to be in or around Texas, June 24th or 21st, or if you're a regular attendee to the AFTA conference, it'd be great to meet you, and it'd be great to have you come to our presentation. So that would be fun. We're going to do this thing live, so we'll see how that goes. That's kind of exciting, and I need a favor. Everybody that's listening, I need a favor. If you get value from this podcast, or you are inspired by this podcast, or just want to keep seeing great guests and conversations and ideas coming at you via this podcast and eventually the YouTube channel, could you do me a favor and quickly go to iTunes and rate and review the show? It would be very much appreciated if you could go rate and review the show. So that would be really helpful. Okay, so let's get to our guest. So Dr. Jonathan Adler is an associate professor of psychology at Olin College of Engineering. His research focuses on identity development in adulthood and its relationship with mental health. He also serves as associate editor of the Journal of Personality and as chief scientific officer of Health Story Collaborative, a Cambridge-based nonprofit that works with medical patients to help them craft and share the story of their experiences of illness and healing. Professor Adler's research has been covered by the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the Boston Globe, National Public Radio, the Atlantic, Scientific American, and other outlets, and now the Radical Therapist. So very excited to have Dr. Jonathan Adler here, and I know you're going to get a lot out of this conversation. So without further ado, Dr. Jonathan Adler. All right. Welcome to the show, Dr. Adler. Glad to have you here.
Thanks so much.
Yep. I appreciate you taking the time. I know you're busy, and so we'll get right into it. I guess I'm always curious, how people came into the work that they're doing. So I guess my first question to you would be, can you tell us how you came into the field of narrative psychology?
Sure. So as an undergraduate, I had pretty broad intellectual interests really across the whole liberal arts spectrum. And so I was a psychology major, but I studied a lot of theater actually. Uh-huh. And mostly from the perspective of directing. I did some acting, but I'm not very good at acting, but, I was really interested in crafting the stories for the stage. And I had the opportunity to do an undergraduate honors thesis where we brought someone from off campus to sort of lead the defense, as it were. And the person who came, my thesis had nothing to do with narrative psychology, but the person who came said, hey, have you heard of this guy Dan McAdams at Northwestern University, who's really developed the theory of narrative identity in personality psychology? And I had not. But I went and looked him up and started reading, and I thought, oh my gosh, this is a thing. This is the thing that I'm interested in. This brings together my interest in storytelling, but also my deep interest in real people and trying to make a real difference in individual people's lives. So I had the unique opportunity to study with Dan McAdams as my graduate mentor. And what was a good fit in particular for me is that he is a personality psychologist by training, not a clinical psychologist, but he can take graduate students in clinical psychology. So I could sort of get the therapy training while still getting a deep immersion in narrative theory and research practices.
That's great. Okay. So could you explain to our audience, or at least summarize the research, because this is, I think, integral to your work, the research around narrative identity and how it comes to be?
Sure. Sure. So from a theoretical perspective, the idea is that the best way to understand identity is as the story that we craft about our lives. So McAdams writes about the internalized, evolving story of the self that weaves together the reconstructed past, the perceived present, and the imagined future. Mm. And those modifiers are important because we know from memory research that our memory is not particularly accurate at recalling the objective facts. We're always reconstructing the past to serve some kind of psychological purpose in the present. Mm. Now, over the course of the lifespan, narrative identity undergoes a lot of development, right? We're born without words, let alone stories. And as children, we're mostly characters in stories that are narrated by other people, usually our parents or caregivers. And as parents, we teach our children implicitly what kinds of life experiences are worth narrating, what kinds of narrative options are available to us for making sense of our lives. And so we come to the moment of adolescence having done a lot of sort of learning about how stories work in our culture. And then in adolescence, we have sort of a convergence of three forces. First is the biological transformation of the body that comes with puberty. And that sort of begs the question, how am I the same person that I used to be, even though I look totally different? Mm-hmm. We have social expectations that in adolescence, we expect people to start to be able to articulate a sense of who they are and what they're doing with their lives. And we expect them to sort of mean it in a way that we don't expect children. Their children we think of as sort of playing with narrative options. And in adolescence, we start to expect people to make some commitments. Mm. And then there's a fair amount of cognitive maturation that supports all of these processes, because telling the story of our lives is a fairly sophisticated cognitive task. So in adolescence, we get biological transformation, social expectation, and cognitive maturation all coming together to cue the emergence of narrative identity. So we think of a narrative identity as sort of emerging in its full form in adolescence and then continuing to evolve over the rest of the life course as new things happen.
That's great. Okay. And in your work, you examine the relationships between different strategies of narrating change and people's mental health. And I'm wondering if you could say more about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So the theory of narrative identity suggests that there are two overarching functions for narrative identity, two reasons that we story our lives. And they are to provide our sense of self with a sense of unity so that we feel like we are the same person from moment to moment, and a sense of purpose, so we know why we're doing what we're doing. Mm. And that we're always touching back into these stories as we constantly negotiate unity and purpose. So one of the really robust findings from across the literature on narrative identity is that all stories are not created equal when it comes to supporting our mental health. And that there are a variety of features of our stories that relate to our mental health. And one of the thing that has received the most empirical attention are the themes that we use in constructing our stories. And what's interesting about themes is that the content of people's stories changes a fair amount. So if I ask you, what's the high point and low point of your life today? And I ask you in 5 years, what's the high point and low point of your life? You might tell me a different story, even if it's not because a new high point or low point happened, but that's just what you happen to think of that day.
Sure, yeah.
But the themes that people use in constructing their lives show a lot more stability than the content. So there's been a lot of research emphasis on the kinds of themes that people use to construct their life stories and the ways in which those themes relate to their mental health.
Yeah, so you have me thinking about themes and how, in your opinion, I guess, how pliable are themes? I mean, I'm thinking of somebody that has a predominantly trauma theme or something coming in, and how changeable, I guess, do you think those themes are? I think because it is important to psychotherapy, correct?
Oh, absolutely. And all forms of psychotherapy, really. Yeah, I think it's a nuanced question. So on the one hand, one of the things that I found most compelling about narrative identity, one of the reasons that I wanted to devote my career to studying it, is that at least theoretically, it should be malleable, right? So McAdams and others sort of put narrative identity in contrast to other parts of personality, like dispositional personality traits, things like extroversion or conscientiousness, which are heavily genetically determined, and they can shift and change, but they're not infinitely flexible over the lifespan, at least theoretically.
Right.
Narrative identity is a story. Yeah. So we should always be able to, and we are not only the main character in that story, but also the narrator. Mm-hmm. So we should also be able to shift it. Now, my practice as a therapist and as a human being shows me people are very attached to their stories, mm-hmm. right? One of McAdams' first books was called The Stories We Live By. Mm-hmm. So these are not just any story. We are deeply invested in these stories. They are the stories that define us. And so people may be resistant to changing these stories. And there may also be structural inequities in our society that foreclose some narrative options for some people.
That was going to actually be my next question. Sometimes we don't have access to particular stories. Correct?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I think that's right. So one of the compelling features of narrative identity is that it sits at the nexus of the individual and the culture, right? Our stories come to us from the scripts available to us in our culture, and we tailor them to fit our own lives. But not all stories are available to all people.
Right. Okay, great. In your work, you acknowledge that change, and this is important to me because I think I've been through this process a few times, but in your work, you acknowledge that change experiences pose a challenge to both the purpose and the unity aims of narrative identity, that when an individual undergoes a change, they must work to make sense of the transition, connecting the self before the change to the self after the change. And this process can lead one to flirt with meaninglessness and incoherence as components to self are cast off and reshaped. And I think, like I said, having been through that experience, and in some ways, I think I'm currently kind of going through some of that experience. Could you say more about that piece of narrating change?
Yeah, absolutely. So in the ways that our stories are our efforts to adapt the sort of templates available to us in our culture to our own lives, we get to rehearse big parts of our life story, right? So we talk about master narratives, the sort of default script templates that are available to us. And a lot of people rehearse, I'm going to graduate from high school and then I'll go to college and then I'll get married and sort of the default script. Mm-hmm. But often things happen in our lives that we have not rehearsed ahead of time, and that's usually difficult things. So positive events can often be storied as sort of the next chapter in the story that's already been unfolding, right? Like we got married, which was the next chapter after we dated for X number of years. But I got cancer is not a story that people have a lot of practice with. And so when those negative, unanticipated events come up, we have a narrative challenge. We haven't practiced that story, and so we need to figure out how it either fits into the story that we've been telling with our lives in order to smooth out the sort of unity of our life story, or we need to revise the story that came before it in order to accommodate that. Mm-hmm. And that can lead to this period of feeling sort of meaningless or incoherent. Mm-hmm. So those kinds of turning point experiences can really shake our narrative identity to its core.
Yeah. Okay. I guess I want to ask more about that because you are a psychotherapist, right? And So I'm wondering how do you work with those moments? Those when what I would call like the betwixt and between or being in the liminal space, right? Do you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah. I think. Let me speak to it a little bit more from the research perspective, which directly informs my clinical practice.
Sure.
But when we think about these turning points, so I talked about the ways in which themes are associated with mental health, and right as clinicians, we're trying to help our clients with their mental health. So there are some themes that show up again and again as positively associated with mental health. For example, there's a theme that's received a lot of attention called redemption sequences, where bad stories have good endings. And this is a theme that we love in American culture. It's part of all of our master narratives. Again, Dan McAdams has this book called The Redemptive Self, Stories Americans Live By. And there's a chapter in that book called From Emerson to Oprah, right? We love this story of bad things turn out good.
Right.
But we know from our clinical experience that it's not always that straightforward. It's not always bad turns good. And indeed, not only is it not always that straightforward, but there's this real cultural press for people to redeem negative things. So, you know, you got that cancer diagnosis. Well, you're going to learn how strong you are, or you're going to learn. Yeah. And it's there's not
only
that
one,
straightforward.
There's only one option to fight it, right? The fight narrative, right? Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So another strain of research shows that there is a host of other themes that don't necessarily relate to these like feeling good outcomes, what we would the technical word be hedonic outcomes, but they do relate to a sense of meaningfulness or what we would call eudaimonic outcomes. And so some of those themes cluster nicely into a category that my colleagues and I have labeled accommodative processing, where you're like deep down there in the struggle, you're mining it for what it means, what it says. And when you get to the other side of accommodative processing, it might not make you happier, but it will give you a sense that you understand this, that you've made sense of it. And so when people are in those betwixt and between moments, I am always conscious of the ways in which we have a cultural press for redemption, that people want it wrapped up and wrapped up positive quickly. And the ways in which that rush to redemption shortchanges our ability to get the meaningfulness out of it. Mm. So I think reframing that period of in-betweenity to be not just a, like the goal of that period is not to just feel good. It's to really understand. And that actually we get the most psychological bang for our buck if first we do the deep exploration and then we come to some resolution.
That's great. Thank you.
So being able to tolerate that period of exploration, I think, is really important.
Yeah, and I think that's the heart of, like, therapy, right? Or in a lot of ways.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Right. Okay, so you reference, I appreciated this, you referenced the centrality of common factors in psychotherapy research. You know, those are those things likely to be found across all models, and that's like therapeutic alliance, the uniqueness of therapeutic setting, the opportunity to talk about oneself. But then reference another set of studies that point toward, or I think kind of move beyond common factors, and that's the importance of narrative coherence and the extent to which the narrator adopts an active role in processing their experience, similar to the construct of agency. I'm wondering if you could say more, and agency being important, and I also believe it being very important, but can you say more about this?
Yeah, I'll be interested to hear your thoughts. So I actually think of both of those as common factors.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I think there's a way in which all forms of psychotherapy are interested in helping the client feel like the active narrator of their lives, helping the client find some sense of coherence in their experiences, and that regardless of the theoretical orientation, that's what is happening. So again, I think about, you know, really time-limited, specific targeted cognitive behavioral therapy for like a phobia and compare it to, you know, decades of deep psychodynamic excavation. In both of those scenarios, you're trying to mobilize the client's agency to understand what's going on. The content of what they're trying to work on is very different in those two modalities. But it's not... There are older forms of psychoanalytic practice that may be less interested in the client agency, right, where the therapist really is the star. But I think most contemporary practice is interested in the ways in which the client is in charge of their experience.
Yeah, agreed. I just think some stances take primary authorship in the story rather than the client taking primary authorship. I guess that's the way I would differentiate that. Like, well, for the psychoanalytic approach, for example, where you're being interpretive and prescriptive, right? I think you are taking the primary authorship in that position rather than having the client do that, right?
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Okay. And I don't know how well that ends up working.
Well, and that's why I was interested in how you kind of frame that. I really was. And, because you do focus on the client being the narrator, and I do think yeah. that's integral. But
yeah, I think since you sent me some of the questions before, I know we're going to talk about one of my psychotherapy studies.
Sure.
But I very briefly in that study clients contacted a clinic to say they'd like to see a therapist. We collected their story, and then we followed them over several months of treatment. We measured their mental health in sort of standard ways, and we collected their narratives at multiple time points along the way so we could look at the trajectory of their narratives alongside the trajectory of their mental health. We also got these little stories from the therapists at the end, and we asked the therapist, tell us what was going on in this client's story. And when we looked at the content of the therapist's stories in relation to client mental health, it didn't matter at all. It didn't matter what story the therapist was telling about the client. The only thing that impacted the client's mental health was the client's story.
Right. Okay. Yeah. That's great. Okay. So let's get, let's get on to your study.
Sure.
Could you break down to us, at least a study I'm referencing, the Living Into Your Story study, which I thought was great. Could you break down for us what your study sought to discover and how you went about doing that?
Sure. So this is the study that I've just outlined, the sort of basic study design.
Sure.
The question was, what's the relationship between changes in people's stories and changes in their mental health over time? The study was designed so that we could track the trajectory of client stories alongside the trajectory of their mental health. This was in a naturalistic outpatient treatment center. It was all adults and all individual therapy, but all kinds of treatments for all kinds of problems. Mm-hmm. And what we found is that, well, first we found that clients' mental health improved over the course of treatment, which
right.
was good because decades and decades of psychotherapy research suggest that it works.
Yeah.
We looked at several themes in their stories, but the main theme that stood out was the theme of agency, the sense that the clients were in the driver's seat of their lives. Not that they were controlling everything that happened to them, because no one controls everything that happens to them, but that they felt like they were directing the action as opposed to being batted around by the whims of external forces. And so we found increases in clients' agency over the course of treatment. And then what was fun about that study from an analytical perspective is that we were able to start with these rich narratives, but also we were able to quantify sort of the density of agency in their narratives, which allowed us to do these fairly sophisticated linear modeling over time of their trajectories. And we found that their stories increased in agency before their mental health tipped up. So they actually were sort of narrating a new version of themselves, and then a week or two later, their mental health would catch up with that story. That's why we called it Living Into the Story.
Yeah, that's great, and I think that's really fascinating that this thing that agency needs to show up first, and then better mental health follows that, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. So, yeah, we don't know. It wasn't an experimental study, so we don't know if it was a causal factor, but it had to have – in order for something to be a cause, it has to have happened first. So we know that there's this temporal precedence of it. So it could be a leading indicator of change, like the story is the first way in which change bubbles up to the surface, or it could be a causal mechanism. Mm-hmm. But it does. We did see these changes come first.
Yeah. So, what's your thoughts? Because I tend to follow the work of narrative therapy, Michael White and David Epstein's work, and I heard somewhere along the line that Michael White said a lot of the primary of his work is really restoring agency, and this is before your study came along. So
sure.
And, in the face of these scripts, these societal scripts, and all these things that we're up against. And I'm wondering, in your own practice, now that you're doing this work, the creating this sense of agency or examining agency?
Yeah, so it's interesting. So I'm familiar with the work of the narrative therapist, too, although I don't actually consider myself a narrative therapist. I think of narrative as a metaphor for the therapeutic experience.
Sure.
That, again, whether you're doing super targeted cognitive behavioral therapy or years and years of psychodynamic treatment, what you're doing is helping clients rewrite their story. Mm-hmm. So, and one of the reasons that I find agency so appealing is that I do think of it as applicable across a wide variety of treatments. Mm. So I do, in my clinical work, though, I do very much listen for client agency. Mm-hmm. I'm really wary of client stories about like, oh, without you, I couldn't have done this. I don't think is going to serve them well.
Right, right. Okay, so continuing that theme, what are your recommendations for therapists, counselors, social workers listening? And how would you want your research to inform their work?
Yeah. So the first thing is, again, I think therapists are often very attached to their theoretical orientations, and I don't need them to let go of those attachments. I think this notion of psychotherapy as a fundamentally narrative endeavor easily folds into whatever people's therapeutic orientation is.
Sure. Yeah.
So adopting this frame that what you're doing is, whether this is the primary focus of your treatment, as it is in narrative therapy, or not, as it is in cognitive behavioral therapy, what you're doing is helping clients rewrite the story of their experiences. And so listening and attending to the ways in which they portray themselves as the main character in that story, and the themes that they use in constructing their story. Many forms of psychotherapy offer moments when you step out of the flow of treatment and you reflect on how the treatment itself is going, right? So again, in cognitive behavioral therapy, you often have every 6 sessions or whatever, you have a check-in where you see how the process is going. In psychodynamic therapy, you might shift to a emphasis on the therapeutic alliance and what that, or transference issues, like what's coming up in the room. Those are opportunities for therapists to first elicit their client's stories about the treatment and to really attend to those themes. So again, I think whenever a client says, you know, oh, you're so brilliant, I couldn't do this without you, I would be worried about that kind of story. And even in the context of medication treatment, where people say, you know, oh, I couldn't do it without the pill, that's a very low agency story. But in fact, the client is the one who had to seek out the treatment. They're the one who commits to taking the pill every day, right? They are really playing an active role in this, even in what seems like a biological intervention. So my advice to therapists is to adopt this frame. First, elicit the stories that your clients are telling about their work with you, and then really to attend to the themes in their stories.
That's great. Okay. Okay, so before I let you go, I guess I have a question. What is capturing your attention these days? What's getting you excited about the field? Is there anything that you're, what's next for you, that kind of thing?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm actually, that's a really nice question, because I'm at the very, very early stages of a project, and I'm still sort of trying to figure out the shape of it. But I've gotten very interested in the relationship between narrative identity and the body. So I do some work, in addition to my day job, teaching and doing research, I do some work with a nonprofit that's based here in Cambridge called Health Story Collaborative, where we work with medical patients to help them craft and share the story of their experiences with illness and healing. Right, physical illness can be incredibly disruptive to people's identity. And we're trying to marshal the tools from the research on narrative identity to influence that. We're actually going to be teaching a course at Harvard Medical School next month for the advanced students. Yeah, on how to use these tools in sort of listening to their medical patients in the clinic. So one of the things that has grown out of that work with Health Story Collaborative is that when people have really significant things come up with their body, it seems to place some constraints on their narrative identity in a way that we don't tend to think of narrative identity as constrained. So to the extent that people have written about constraints on narrative identity, it's been from this sort of social structural perspective, right? Like, not all stories are available in the culture to all people. So that's sort of an outward in constraint. Mm-hmm. And I've been interested in the ways in which there's this sort of inward to outward constraint, that when things happen to your body, you can't story them away. So if someone gets divorced or they get fired, they can tell whatever kind of story they need to tell about that. But if they get a cancer diagnosis, no story is going to make that go away. Right. So I've been very interested in the ways in which the body puts constraints on identity and trying to explore the ways in which people navigate that.
Great. And I look forward to having you back on the show when you finish up some of that work. So
sounds great.
Be great. Okay. So just before we go, if our listeners want to reach out to you or find you or get exposed to your work, how would they do that?
Yep. Best is to find my website, which is faculty.olin.edu/jadler, J-A-D-L-E-R, or send me an email at jadler@olin.edu.
Great. Okay, Dr. Adler, I want to thank you for taking the time. This has been great.
Thanks so much. It was fun.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thank you.
Yep.
Well, that's our show. And as always, thank you for listening. Please come engage with us via social media. You can find our website at theradicaltherapist.com. We are on Instagram at theradicaltherapist, on Twitter at theradtherapist, and Facebook at theradicaltherapist. Come join us at Facebook. I'm going to be doing some things with Facebook. And if you want some stickers or shirts, I think I still got some. I know I got stickers. I think I might have size in shirts, and I think I have more coming. So just ask me. Send me an email at theradicaltherapist@gmail.com. Or if you just want to reach out and say hi and tell me good things about the show, that would be appreciated at theradicaltherapist@gmail.com. And I really enjoyed this conversation. I hope you did, with Dr. Adler. I hope if you are experiencing narrative incoherence or narrative identity incoherence, it's not too terrible. And if it is, reach out. Don't do it in isolation. So, that's it. As always, my name is Chris Hoff, and this has been the Radical Therapist Podcast. Thanks for listening.